It's one of the few guys also with the name of Fred. See Red Fred, hey, join us.
Justin Holliday.
My man.
Justin Holliday.
People love See Red Fred.
Oh, Santa, can you please trade Justin Holliday for Drew?
You know, Fred, See Red Fred always comes on. He's a great guy. He's so nice.
It's another bull season, and Lori's hurt, and so is Dunn. I must admit, it hasn't been fun, cause I'm Bulls fans, man, they call me a bum, cause I said we'd be a playoff team.
You said you thought that the Bulls didn't have holes all over the roster.
It's another Bulls season, and Bobby's hurt, and so is Dunn, but very soon we'll go on a run, and then we'll cheer, man, and have lots of fun, cause we're gonna get the 7th
seed. Hey, Nick, I asked that one day, when you have a son, think about Fred as an option for a name.
Well, my good friend Nick took a trip.
My man.
He got a job out with Golden State, but you heard it here, he'll be back next year. Cause man, we signed Durant, man, we're gonna be great. It's another bull season.
I agree with you, Fred.
I'm a driving round a big red bus. All of my friends, man, they say that I'm nuts. With Boylan here, no ifs, ands, or buts. Yeah, we're gonna have a title team.
What say you?
I agree with you, Fred.
Hello again, everybody. Welcome to another exciting episode of the Chicago Bullseye. We have two great Bullseye guests today. Epic, legendary men. The great Keith Franz at Bull Scripted. And the legendary Buzz from
Sports Mockery. Sports Mockery, and I'm a part of the Outcast podcast, me and my dude Juice, man.
I love you guys. I can't recommend that podcast enough. They're up there ranked with, of course, our podcast, The Big Red Bus. And then there's like a big gap, and you know, and then there's you guys right there. So,
awesome.
So you're definitely up there. All right, man. So tonight, unfortunately, or fortunately, depending on who the person is, I had a coach, my son's fourth grade travel team. So I did not get to watch the game yet. We're recording here just after with 9:49 Central Standard Time. So I'm eager to hear some thoughts about the first game of the Jim Boylan era. Let's start with you, Buzz. We'll go over to you, Keith, shortly. Anything you saw different? Give us an overall commentary on what you saw tonight. Is it good, bad, or somewhere in the middle?
I'd say somewhere in the middle. I feel that, you know, I don't know if it's Jim Boylan's coaching or it's, you know, jitters from the players for the change that occurred with Fred Hoiberg being fired, but they played hard on both ends of the floor. Jabari Parker was in there playing defense tonight. Surprisingly enough, there was only two, you know, in the loss, there was only two players that finished with a plus in the plus minus category, and that was Shaq Harrison and Zach LaVine. Defense was played all around tonight. I feel like the players played very hard, and it looked at times that they were having fun. You know, a lot of smiling on the court, a lot of laughing, and you know, I feel like Jim tried putting himself in the game. There's a press conference before the game saying that he had butterflies in his stomach, that he wanted to be out there with the guys. And you saw the guy in a defensive stance out there on the sidelines tonight, just excited to be doing the job and excited to be leading this group of young players into battle. So I was very impressed. Like I said, I don't know if that's his coaching style or if that's you know, jitters of Fred Hoiberg being fired and the team knowing that it needs to pick it up. I understand there's injuries, but I feel that it went well.
Keith, what say you?
Well, I thought the game was fantastic. We actually had a defensive rotation that looked somewhat competent tonight. We held them under 100 points. We were in the game the whole entire game. And offensively, it wasn't a lot of stagnant, my turn, your turn. There was a lot of ball movement. There was a lot of attention to making the extra pass, which we saw more times than not tonight. And I will piggyback on what Buzz said a bit, and it could have to do with the fact that a coach just got fired that is still under contract, going to be paid. You know, that kind of sends a pretty clear message, like, hey, if you're not going to do your job, we don't care if we still owe you money. We'll ship you out. We'll fire you. We don't care. We'll move you out, and we'll move on. It's time to crack down. We're getting healthy. There's no more games. And it was kind of like a reset button, and it was re-energizing tonight.
Okay, so I haven't watched the game yet. I'm going to do that after this cast. A couple things immediately bounce out to me on the box score, which I'm pretty irritated about. Five free throws the whole game. Yeah. Zach LaVine with zero. Lauri Markkanen with zero. Jabari Parker with zero. What the heck happened? Was it poor officiating? Was it just a lack of attacking the rim? That's insane.
Actually, Zach attacked the rim quite often. Out of his 15 shots, only three of them were three-pointers. Zach, in the first half, he was getting to the hoop. It just seems like the Indiana Pacers' interior defense was very good tonight. I'm not going to throw that out and say that they weren't good and say that it was all the refs. But there was a couple missed calls, I felt like, especially with Lowry in the third quarter. I felt like he got hacked when he went up for an offensive rebound for a putback. I mean, there was a few of those, but I'm sure it went both ways. But the discrepancies in the free throws, the fact that we only shot five free throws this game is pretty discouraging for Jim Boylan's first game as head coach. But that was nothing that he implemented in by shooting threes or by, you know, staying out of the paint. That was nothing that I feel Boylan did. I just feel like it was the luck of the draw tonight. And
24-5. Unbelievable.
Yeah. Yeah,
unbelievable.
It was rough.
Did he this is a big thing for me. Did he make his displeasure known?
Fred, he was calling traveling calls and 3-second calls for the refs from his defensive stance on the side. So he was definitely getting into the refs. He was making calls for them. And his comment after the game was, if we get tougher, we'll get the calls. So he wasn't going to take a shot at the refs the first night that he's a head coach. But It was definitely a problem. Zach attacked way too much to not have any free throws.
Yeah.
Right.
Holiday playing 41 minutes. Another issue for me. I wanted to see Hutchinson play more than eight. I thought that would change. Obviously, unfortunately, it's not. Markkanen, 8 of 24 from the field. A team low, minus 12. 5 of 13 from three-point range. I mean, it doesn't look great. He did have overall with 21 points and 10 boards, which is nice. But what was your take on his game tonight?
Lowry's shot was not falling. He did have, he said that in the post game. He said that every shot that he let go felt good coming off his hands. And he did. He looked confident out there. He looked good. But, you know, being the second game back, his first start, and you know, before the game started, they were saying he was going to play 24 to 38 minutes. He ended up playing 32. And this is the second game back. You know he's going to have some rust. He hasn't had a NBA preseason nor any regular season games besides, I know this is the second game, but he played last game only a little bit, you know. So I feel that he did all right,
What's your take, Heath?
I feel it was kind of a game where Zach himself was trying to get Lowry back into things. Lowry himself is getting back into things. In the first quarter, Lowry played the first 10 minutes. He didn't get taken out until there was 2 minutes left in the first. And I think a lot of that was by design for conditioning to work on him getting back into game shape and pushing him to that limit safely. So it is going to take time. A lot of his looks that he missed were open. So I really don't have a problem with the shots that he took. And his three-point presence was definitely needed and felt on the floor, and it's great to have him back.
A couple more things that stick out. Just going through the box score, these are things I always look at. Bulls had 11 fast break points. The Pacers had 11 fast break points. Points in the paint, 42 for the Bulls, 42 for the Pacers. The Bulls actually outscored them off the bench, 29 points, led by Parker, 25 points for the Pacers. I'm looking at some of these stats. The one that just hits you in the face is the free throws, but everything else, looks like the Bulls had a pretty good night. Again, Wendell Carter Jr. was a positive and a plus-minus. He had 13 boards, 12 points. Looks like a pretty good game. 4 assists. Let's look at the assist numbers. Zach LaVine with 9 assists tonight. Great to see. Unfortunately, everyone's favorite son, Ryan Archie, not in the NBA, had a horrible game, 0 for 5.
Oh, come on.
0 for 3, minus 10. Just a terrible game, but I'm sure he'll turn that around, hopefully, very soon, as soon as Dunn comes back. I guess overall, looking at this, we lost because we didn't get the free throw attempts.
Yeah, I mean, I feel, you know, the Bulls played, like I said, me and Keith said in the beginning, I feel the Bulls played a good game. I don't know what it contributed to, whether it was the new regime or nerves or what, but they played a pretty good game. I mean, total rebounds, 45 for the Pacers, 44 for the Bulls. They rebounded the ball a lot better. You know, they actually won out in offensive rebounds with 12, which was very encouraging because that's something that Boylan said yesterday, that, you know, they needed to focus on Absolutely. Getting more boards.
Yeah.
So that was – I was really happy with that, to be honest. You know, Bulls, they had 19 turnovers, which, you know, obviously we don't like to see that, but the Pacers had 18. So, you know, like I said, it was all good around game, I guess. You know, unfortunately, we didn't come away with the W. Shooting the 39% really didn't help us. Well, the Pacers shot 46%. But we outshot the Pacers by almost 20 shots, too. I mean, we went 37 for 94. The Pacers went 35 for 76. So, I mean, you know, yeah. The Bulls had ample opportunities. It's just some shots weren't falling, and that contributed to the loss.
Well, that's what irritated me the most about Fred. I noticed it this year in the offense this year, more so than in previous years. But the Bulls, to me, without a doubt, led the league in field goal attempts with no one within about 10 feet of the rim. I mean, if you're missing that shot, there's no chance at an offensive rebound. And they did that consistently this year, and it just made me disgusted. I'm so glad he's gone. I mean, let's get into that now a little bit, to the firing of Fred Hoiberg. And I know, you know, there's his defenders out there. I've never heard more Fred defenders in the last three days, with all this nonsense of people calling up and saying, you know, he never was given a shot. Well, let's start with that. What is the perfect guy for Fred Hoiberg's offense? Let's figure that one out. Because I was unaware that, like, every coach in the NBA has nothing but a squad of perfect players to run what he or she wants to run. It's insanity to me that this narrative is just taking place. He's never given a chance. You look at that roster he had in that first year with Etuan Moore. I don't know how many tweets I've read about how great Etuan Moore is. Well, he was on that team. Or what about the great Nico Mirotic? What about the great Doug McDermott? All these guys are still playing in the league. These guys are all shooters who are still rotation players in the league. Jimmy Butler in his prime. Derrick Rose. Paul Gasol, who the year after he leaves the Bulls, leads the league in three-point percentage. But with the Bulls, I guess Fred wasn't as creative enough to get him to that level. You know, I am so sick of this. He didn't have the talent. Nonsense. The guy was, and reading the article from Mayberry today, and I sent you guys some of those quotes. Let's start there. I'm sorry, I've gone on a little bit too much. Keith, let's start out with you with this one. Let's hear your defense for the great Fred Hoiberg.
I think you're being a little overly critical of Fred's first 2 years. He had an above 500 record as a rookie coach and a second-year coach. Made the playoffs in his second year with a team that, whether you want to call it tailored to him or not, he inherited problems. And he had to work through those problems. Fred got through a lot of adversity while he was here. And I think what people are saying when they're saying Fred never got a shot is this whole rebuild was supposedly being tailored towards Fred. And this was supposed to be his year. And now when he's just going to have his final opportunity after going through all the BS that he inherited and getting through the problems, they can him. So I think that's where fans are saying he didn't get the opportunity because he was primed for this opportunity and then fired right before he was able to take any application.
Buzz.
So it's 50-50 for me. So he came in the first year with a team with Derrick Rose, you know, Joakim Noah, Jimmy Butler on it still, Pau Gasol.
Taj Gibson, Justin Holiday, Nico Mirotic, Etuan Moore, Bobby Portis, Derrick Rose, Tony Snell.
So they went 42-40 that year, and they ended up missing the playoffs in the Eastern Conference. Yeah. So then, the next year, Derrick Rose is traded to New York. Joakim Noah is gone. You get Jerry and Grant and them back, but you go and sign Rajon Rondo and Dwayne Wade, both ball-dominant guards. Come in, and you make the playoffs, but you lose in the first round after a Rondo injury.
Isaiah Cannon, after Rondo gets hurt.
Right.
Just
right.
And a whole litany of questionable decisions, but playing a bum like Paul Zipser, 44 games, averaging him, you know, just insanity. But we'll move on. But so, and he lost the respect of the veterans. That was number one that year. The vets didn't respect him. So it's the young guys that got to respect him, right? So let's go to the next year with a new young team.
Right. So then he gets into the next year. He finishes 27-55. The first thing that you hear is that Bobby Portis broke Nico's face. and it causes controversy, right? So every year, I wrote an article about this for Sports Mockery. Every year, Fred has dealt with some sort of controversy, whether it was the first year he came in and said that shit to the media, I'm sorry, said that stuff to the media about, you know, Joakim Noah not being, you know, cool coming off the bench, caused controversy in the locker room, right? Then he dealt, and then in the second year, he dealt with the Jimmy Butler and Dwayne Wade drama all year long. Then the third year, he has the drama with Nico and Bobby in the beginning of the year. Then, you know, this year he gets fired. Zach LaVine calls him out. Jabari Parker calls him out. Did Fred get a fair shake? I feel like there was a lot of derailments along the way if he actually did get a fair shake. I think that's fair to say. He had a lot of derailments. He had a lot of adversity to overcome just to, you know, kind of, again, to return the favor and piggyback off of Keith here. He had a lot of adversity to deal with. But one thing that sticks out and I notice a lot with Fred is that controversy seemed to follow him no matter what kind of team he got. And he was questioned left and right. You know why? Because he's a good guy. Don't get me wrong. But nice guys finish last, and he's too nice of a guy, and he got walked on all over by his players. And when the young players started doing it to him, like Jabari Parker and Zach LaVine, that's when I soured, and I was like, screw it. I understand they're, like, making a roster that fits this hoyball system that we haven't seen yet, but I'm done. Because he's getting called out by two young players who haven't done anything in this league. Nothing.
Not just that. Darnell Mabry has a quote from his article today, and I'm going to read it to you guys. Quote, unquote, Blakeney took exception to Hoiberg's subbing him out and asked, why the F are you taking me out? End quote. End quote. I'll have to edit that out. There's kids who listen. Yeah. And my response is, who the hell is stinking Antonio Blakeney? You're the stinking cares. G League MVP? Who gives a shit? Where do you get off questioning your coach? He should have got right in his face. What did you say to me, you son of a... Get your shit and get in the locker room. You're not sitting on this bench. Where does he get off asking it? He's done absolute shit in the NBA. Who the fuck is he?
This is my favorite podcast I've ever been a part of right now. I'm having so much fun.
If I had some coach tell that to me, I mean, some player tell that to me, honestly, is that how you're going to react? You're going to put him back in? Read the article. He didn't say anything. I mean, give me a break. What the hell has Antonio Blakeney earned to talk to a coach like that? Here's why I'm taking you out, you dipshit. You fucking suck at D. Your shot selection sucks. How about that, dickhead? Now fuck yourself and shut the fuck up. I cannot believe this bullshit. Now I gotta spend a half an hour out. After I read that, this guy should have been fired last year. If people talk to him like that, that is the most insane thing I've ever heard of. This guy Blakeney. And why is he on the team? Honestly.
Well, see, the thing is with that, Fred, where I sit with the Antonio Blakeney drama, because I heard about it from you. It's not that I don't keep up with, you know, I try to keep up with what Mabry writes, but I don't have the Athletic, you know, I'm part of my own little separate entity, if you will. But when I read that, I was like, wow. But it didn't really do anything for me. And the reason it didn't do anything for me and I wasn't upset about Blakeney doing it is because I kind of figured something like that probably would happen anyway. Because honestly, I understand Wendell Carter Jr. was the 7th pick in the draft, and I'm not taking anything away from the big man from Duke. But he somewhat called out Fred this year too, man.
He absolutely did.
He said players were playing selfishly, that they go into games for themselves. Where does that start, Fred? Where does that start, Keith? That starts with your coach. Your coach nips that in the ass. That's where your coach that ends at the door. You are a cohesive unit. You are a well-oiled machine. You are one band, one sound when you're out on the court. That's how you win ball games.
You're absolutely right. That kind of attitude needs to be nipped right in the bud. You need to walk over him. If you don't want to make a scene, that's fine. You walk right over to him. When he's sitting down, you say, don't you ever fucking question me again, you piece of shit. Shut the fuck up. I cannot believe he said nothing. I cannot freaking believe it after I read that. I'm so freaking furious. And again, I will state this. PAX or somebody in that organization needs to get to that head because he's done jack to allow himself to talk like that. Who does he think he is? I mean,
he had endorsement from Kevin Durant, remember, in the beginning of the season? Or Keith Way was in the offseason, right? Kevin Durant tweeted that.
It was during Summer League, but I hate to burst your fury bubble here, but Blakeney has since commented directly to Darnell Mabry, telling him, all due respect to you and your sources, but I never said anything like that to Coach Fred. So, I don't know. This could be getting blown out of proportion. I wouldn't doubt it. I think Fred's easy to walk on.
Well, if so, I apologize.
I think we let it roll, because that was gold.
Who would make that up? Who would make that up? I mean, you got to be some kind of a-hole to make that up about it. And if it's true, I apologize, Antonio. I apologize.
I've been
sitting here silent here, just enjoying you guys just rip on Antonio Blakeney, who may not ever have said that to Fred, and somebody just leaked something to Darnell that, you know, Fred's fired. Yeah, here's all the dirty stuff that people were saying to Fred that he wasn't responding to, and here we are.
All right, well, I know Darnell. We're friends on Twitter. I'm going to IM him directly and ask him, who was your source? And tell me yes or no if it was true.
Fred, do you still use AOL?
I have.
Direct message.
Direct message. It's sliding into DM. Your DMs
sorry.
Man.
DM.
Come on.
It goes down in the DM.
Hey, guys, I'm old and I'm tired. Oh, man. But I tell you, but Keith, you got to admit, when you read that, were you not disgusted? That was ridiculous. Absolutely ridiculous reading that. And if it's true, he should have been gone a long time ago. Can you imagine somebody sitting at the Thibodeau?
No, you can't, and that's probably a big reason why Fred's gone. Everybody knew how they could approach Fred. They knew he was non-confrontational. They knew he was just going to and woosah away and go deal with it on his own and never say anything about it again and come into work like nothing ever happened. And I will, as much as I am a Fred defender, and I do think that he got a fair shake and he should have been able to finish out this opportunity that was portrayed as being set up for him, I do think it was the right move. I think it was handled improperly. I think Gar should have to answer some part of this somewhere. But I do think it was the right move. I don't know if it's the right time or the right way to go about it, but it was the right move.
Yeah, no doubt about it. Like, there's so many excuses for the guy. And, you know, I hope this is the right decision. And I've said this, guys. I don't know if you agree with me. You know, Boylan is the guy now. He's on for another year and a half. If this doesn't work out, as much as I admire John Paxson, as much as I respect the job that he's done, I think he's done a good job overall. I think these guys are a lead at drafting. It's time to try something else. You know, it probably won't be as good as these guys are, but it'll be time to move on if this doesn't work out. Because, I mean, this coaching hire was a complete disaster, and I'm not going to carry the water for them on this one. This was a big mistake. What say you, Buzz?
So this is something that I just talked about. I did a live video as well today. It's on our Twitter page, on the SMLcast Twitter page. I feel that if the whole thing with Boylan doesn't work out, Fred, I'm done with Garpax. I gave credit where credit was due, man. They draft well, all right? Like, they do. They've hit on more players than they have missed on, and that's fact. That's fact. So getting into this is their fifth coaching hire. And to me, man, it's just, you see a pattern here, right? So like Scott Skiles, what would you say? He's defensive minded, correct?
Well, that was a fantastic hire. Skiles was a great hire.
So then when they fire him, though, they go from a defensive mind to what? Vinny Del Negro, offensive mind.
Let's stop right there for a second. So I brought this up with on the Big Red Bus with Doug Tonis. That wasn't Pax's first choice. His first choice was Mike D'Antonio. I think we all agree would have been a fantastic choice. It was nixed by ownership. His second choice was Doug Collins, another fantastic choice, a guy I love. I think is one of the best coaches ever in Bulls history, nixed by ownership. So now you're down to number three. I don't care what GM you are. Your third choice is not probably going to be a great one. And Vinny Del Negro, as many faults as he had, and he did suck as a coach, and I do not respect him. We were never under 500. The team, he had Taj make all rookie. He had Rose make some steps. So, you know, he was bad. But, again, third choice. His next coach was Thibodeau. Good or bad?
Well, it was good. But like I said, it went from defense to offense to defense to offense, now to Jim Boylan.
The defense.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I got you.
So it's like, to me, I don't know if they know where they want to go. You know, like, that's where I'm just like kind of sitting there looking at it like, man, you know, like, I don't think that they not that they can't understand what they're trying to do, but they don't have a clear direction. Like, they pick the rebuild, they're giving their guy, the coach, the innovator of an offense, his sort of offense, and they fire him for a defensive-minded coach. And then today they posted the sixth lowest offensive rating they've had all season at 91.5. You know, like, I just don't understand where they want to go. That's what confuses me. And I'm pretty much, like I told you in the beginning here, I'm pretty much just done with them if this Boylan thing doesn't work out. Because, yeah, you could draft well, but...
Did you guys sense that he tried to slow it down today? Is that why?
Yes, he's definitely trying to slow the pace down. He's not running and gunning. He gave homage to Pop at the end of the game. He said, we're going to be road dogs. We're going to run when we're supposed to run, but we're going to slow it down and control the game.
Hmm, good. I think you have to with the talent you have on this team right now, you know? Until Dunn comes back and you start getting some guys back, I guess, and then speed it up a little bit. I do agree with a lot of that. I felt we fired up too many shots with no one near the rim. It sounds like, Keith, are you on board with what Buzz and I just said on Fred and in this being the last chance for these guys?
I would like to kind of point out what you were going through, and that's that ownership kind of oversteps a lot. Their hires aren't exactly allowed to do what they actually want to do, and that's where I feel Gar should probably be sacrificed as a sacrificial lamb at this point, because everybody just, you know, has it out for him, got a distaste in their mouth as soon as they hear his name. I think you have to do that to show this fan base something. I don't care if you pay him on the side to still be a scout. I don't care if he's still coming to your family parties, but you got to do something to get fans to know that you're hearing them. But outside of that, whoever you bring in, they're not going to bring in somebody that they don't have some kind of control over. We're going to have the same situation again. And at least we know that Gar and Pax, or maybe just Pax when he's making the decisions, make the right draft night decisions. And that is really the only controlled situation that you have as a front office, especially the Bulls front office. Trades are all situational. They come up out of nowhere. If you don't have the pieces, you're left out. If you're not at the right point of your rebuild and it's not the right time to trade for that, you pass. So all those kind of outside things are uncontrolled, just like free agency. You can't control who's going to come here. But drafting, you can control. So that's where I have a problem, that unless you know the people that you're bringing in can replace their drafting, you're just going to be going backwards.
Great points. I agree. I mean, I think there's a good chance we do go backward because, you know, I brought this up in the last 11 years. There's only been three front offices that have drafted three all-NBA players. I mean, all-star players, anybody can make an all-star team. Luol Deng made two of them. I mean, not anybody, but, you know, it's a lot easier to make an all-star team. It's harder to make all-NBA. And the Bulls had three of them. Oklahoma City's had three of them since in the last 11 years, and the other team is Golden State. That's it. Nobody else has done that. And, you know, the only difference between all three of those teams is that the Bulls had two guys approach minimum contract status in Rose and Noah. You know,
and Deng, too. You can throw Deng in that pile. It's not like he's really done much since Tibbs got him paid.
He never made All-NBA. That's the only reason I stated that one. But,
I apologize.
Yeah, but it's, you know, the Bulls did have Noah and Rose make first team All-NBA, and then Butler made second team at some point in his career. But, you know, so I just bring that up because it's very difficult to draft well. I think the last four first-round picks for them, Ben Wundercard Jr., Larry Markkanen, Noah, and Rose, have all been homers, you know. So as far as identifying and drafting talent, I'm very confident in what they can do. As far as picking a coach, I'm a little bit less confident. And, you know, this has been a disaster overall.
Well, not only picking a coach, but, I mean, even, like, to kind of – you know, go off of what Keith said, is like, I understand that drafting is very important. Drafting is very, very important in this league. But if a big-time free agent was even somewhat interested in coming to Chicago, do you hear how all this national media people talk, man? We can hand them the world. We can hand them money. When you come to Chicago, you're in a huge market. You're in the Midwest. You're the king of the Midwest if you're a good player. No one wants to come here because of these guys. We see it on all these television shows, and I usually, hey, I try not to watch ESPN, but I couldn't help myself today. I saw The Jump. I saw First Take with Max Kellerman. Did you? And by the way, he used to be a rapper. He's terrible. And just to keep piggybacking.
That.
Yeah, oh, my God, I'll send you the link. Oh, my, it's crazy. But, you know, like, it's just no one wants to come here. I mean, the front office is bashed. They're classified and vilified as villains, man. And it's like – that no established coach, they say, wants to come here.
I don't believe that.
Tom Thibodeau was a rookie head coach. Fred Hoiberg is a rookie head coach, and so is Jim Boylan, a rookie head coach. They might have been in the league for a long time, but they're rookie head coaches. They're not established head coaches.
I still think any coach, if they put out enough money, will come here. I don't think that's as much of an issue. If you look at the great free agents who've been signed, there's only like five or six in the last 12 years that have signed anybody better than Pau Gasol in 2014. Pau Gasol made second team All NBA that year.
He was fantastic.
So, again, you know, Bulls can't sign any free agents, and I throw that out, and then everybody jumps like, well, he wasn't that good. Well, I'm just pointing out they did sign a guy that made All-NBA second team as a free agent.
They signed Ben Wallace,
and, he was no good. The point was he was the number one free agent in that class. So I bring this up because I did have a conversation with a Nets fan, and I was talking about how the general opinion of Bulls fans is that they never sign any free agents. And he started telling me about how they wanted to sign Carlos Boozer in 2011, lost out on him, how they wanted to sign Gasol, how they wanted to sign all these guys that we ended up signing. You know, the Bulls in their free agency have had some success. It's not like most organizations fail. Most organizations don't have a chance in heck at signing a free agent. How have the Knicks done?
We got to factor in the fact that there's only five top players in the NBA. Two of them are currently on the same team. And if you're not the best situation, everybody can offer the max amount of money. Unless you have bird rights and you can offer somebody more money, you don't really have any extra, why do you want to come play in Chicago when it's freezing cold? Why do you want to come play in Chicago when the media will tear you apart at every turn? Like, there's a lot of stuff around Chicago that isn't the Bulls front office that is a problem. Basketball season is in the winter. Winter in Illinois sucks.
Yes, agreed.
The media for Chicago, like we've just pointed out, no matter what they do, is always over-criticized, and it's not ever put in a good light. So there's a lot of negative factors, and Michael Jordan is also one of them. People deny that. But you do not want to come to Chicago unless you know you're going to have success, because it can ruin your career.
I'll give you that, man. I will give you that. But again, at the end of the day, I know you say Ben Wallace and Pau Gasol. Pau Gasol was in his late 30s. You know what I'm saying? And I understand that other teams don't get these free agent signings and stuff like that. And I understand your point, Keith, of Michael Jordan being, you know, this be all end all, this giant shadow. This thing that nobody could reach. I understand all of that. But there comes a time, there comes an era when that needs to change. And it's not the same old story every single time. Chicago is a huge market. And yes, it does suck here in the winter, but Chicago is a huge market. A huge market. I feel that it could be pitched a lot better than it has been. I mean, for God's sakes, we missed out on Carmelo Anthony, too, which is a blessing in disguise, but a lot of fans wanted Melo. You were with me on Twitter with that whole thing. You both were with me on Twitter on that whole thing. I didn't want him, but fans everywhere wanted him. We're showing up at the United Center to try to help court this guy, and he doesn't come here. And we were throwing money at him.
Well, Gasol was 34 when he came here. He signed at 34, and he's still in the league. It's like,
I was gonna say, he's still making like $15 million, I think. So he's still
productive player. After. I mean, he was definitely on the twilight of his career. He wasn't playing, but his first year with us was fantastic. It's one of the most underrated seasons. The reason we didn't get past the second round against Cleveland wasn't because of Gasol. I mean, partly because he got hurt in that second round. It was because that. Joakim Noah went from first team All-NBA to a complete disaster in 1 year. And that year when Gasol signed, he devolved to the point he was shooting 35% from the free throw line. For the majority of his career, he was shooting 75%. He wasn't recognizable. He wasn't being guarded in the playoffs. And it's amazing that somebody actually wanted to pay him after that. The Knicks were so stupid that they paid him a huge amount of money, and the Bulls made the right decision to let him walk. I love Noah. But, God, he was awful. Absolutely awful.
Yeah, he was bad that year. I give you that. It's just there's a lot of things with Gar and Pax that, I mean, how long do you keep riding out the good draft picks? You know?
No,
when they're all you got, man. Like, they haven't had a team to pitch to a big free agent since Rose was healthy. That was their window of being able to draw in another top five talent. LeBron James is the only top five talent in KD that have really bounced around. Where did KD go? He went to a 73-win team. That was the only team that could offer him that. So, and that's what I don't understand, is people, well, Rose injury is an excuse. No, it's not. He was a top two player in the NBA that you had just freshly paid, and you tried to wait out. They sacrificed time upon time waiting for him.
Yes.
And then they finally had to move on. And then you had to try to,
Move on for Noah.
What was left that team. They ended up waiting the perfect amount of time, got the best value possible for Butler. There wasn't a better trade out there previous to that draft night trade. So I just
If I hear another person throw out the younger and more athletic, like they said they wanted to be younger and more athletic, and it's supposed to instantly happen. You know, if we want to go about a technicality, is Rondo younger and more athletic than Kirk Heinrich? Yes.
Hold on a second. Careful.
That's a fact. And then was Wade younger and more athletic than Mike Dunleavy? Yes. That's what they traded for in that first year after he said younger and more athletic. And then the following year, they got younger and more athletic. And now, is this team pretty young? Yes. Is it pretty athletic? I'd say yes.
Well, and I would add they signed Rondo with a built-in buyout for the second year, and they were willing to pay Wade $20 million to leave so they could get younger and focus their new objective once they got top dollar for
it. We know damn well they didn't bring in Rajon Rondo and Dwayne Wade just to be more younger and athletic than Mike Dunleavy and Kirk
Heinrich. No, I'm making a joke.
People
said I'm a technicality, Buzz.
Being sarcastic.
I missed the technicality part. Okay, I did not.
I'm just saying it's technically true. They did get younger and more athletic by leaving Kirk and his old carcass of a basketball player for Rondo.
Oh, no.
And then we're not going to get into that tonight. And then by leaving,
we killed Archie with the 0-5, and now we're coming for Kirk. I'm ready.
Oh no, I ain't getting double teamed out here, man.
Do you really believe Archie's the backup point guard of the future?
Do I believe he's the backup point guard of the future?
Yes.
Yes, I believe he is the backup point guard of the future.
Okay, I'm done with that. All right. backup point guard. Oh, guys. We've already been talking for 35 minutes here, so we got to wrap this baby up.
Fred's got to get back.
Yeah,
I got to get his wife's birthday. We've stolen birthday. Him away.
I think she heard me swearing and wondered what the heck is going on down here.
Are they talking about Mo Bamba again?
Exactly. First of all, Buzz, tell us where everyone could find you. Tell us about the show, please.
All right, so you can find me on Twitter at SM Buzzweed. I know it's a crazy name, at SM Buzzweed. You can find our podcast at SM Outcasts. We are the Outcasts of Buzz and Juice. We are all a Chicago sports podcast covering everything from the Bulls, the Blackhawks, the White Sox, the Bears, and the Cubs. Cover all that stuff from whatever national media we think is stupid we'll talk about any given day. I'm employed by sportsmockery.com, so you can find my articles there and our podcasts there.
Keith, and where can everybody find you and talk a little about the cast too? I know you came out with another episode.
I'm running the Believers podcast again. It's Believers Pod on Twitter, at Bulls Scripted on Twitter. I'm self-employed. I just like talking about the Bulls. You can find me here with Fred once a week or whenever I get around to releasing a podcast that isn't bashing Jabari too much, because I have trashed a couple of those this year.
And Jabari looks like he had a decent game tonight, looking at the line.
He hustled. Fred.
I'm going to feel proud when I watch this tonight. Is that the story here? Disappointed with Ryan?
I honestly think so. I think that he played. I think he hustled tonight. I think that he gave a lot more effort than I've seen out of him a lot of the season. So I'd give him a pass for this game for sure.
I didn't see. I gotta say, I don't see any Gustav videos sent to me. So I think that's a good sign.
Well, wait till you see the campaign get knocked down by Sabonis twice during screens. That's something.
That'll be enjoyable. Guys, it was a blast, and I think we're all in agreement the Boylan era should be much brighter. To wrap it up, I want to get your prediction. What do you think they're going to go record-wise going forward from here on out with under the great Jim Boylan? Let's start with you, Keith.
All right, we got 57 left. I'll go 20-37.
Oh, my God.
What do you want? They're still the second youngest team in the league. They got stuff to figure out. I'm glad that they're competing now, though.
Okay. What do you say? What do you say, Buzz? 20.
We're 5-20 right now. We're getting Dunn and Portis back probably within the next week and a half, 2 weeks here. I'll say they finish off with about 25 wins, maybe 24 wins. I think they'll catch a stride here. I think they'll hit a stride, win a couple games in a row, unless they just go full on tank. I would say 23 to 25 wins. We'll go right in there.
The correct answer is they're going to win 28 more games. So 28, that means plus 5, there'll be 33 wins. You heard it from me.
All right, man.
All right, guys. Have a great one. Have a great evening. Always great talking to you guys.
All right, take care,
Fred. Let's do it again soon. All right, man.
Absolutely.